No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock. We give the people the right to vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and that affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us questions at BBSRADIO1. Tonight, we have a special guest, Nick Sakurai. Nick is a well-educated MBA, master's degree, activist, and he lives here in Washington. And Nick is the first person in the country to receive a gender-neutral driver's license. So we want to talk to him about that and some of the issues that motivate him to get out into our great city here in Washington, D.C., and be an activist for the LGBT community. Nick, are you with us?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on the show. I think these are important issues. But let's start with your recent celebrity. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Nick, but are we the first jurisdiction here in Washington to have gender-neutral driver's licenses?
Yes, I think officially the District of Columbia was the first place in the U.S. to begin offering a third option other than MRF to go on a driver's license or ID card, and that option is the letter X, which can mean either unspecified or other.
Well, tell me why you think this is important. Nick, why is it important that we do this?
Sure. I mean, it's available for a couple of different reasons. One is that it can provide additional privacy for anyone who might not want to list their gender on their ID. They can list an X instead, so it's available to all district residents. But also for those people like me who identify outside of a gender binary, who don't identify necessarily as exclusively a man or a woman, it makes sure that our government recognizes us, that we're allowed to exist under the law, and provides that for us, that at least to our government, our local government, that we exist, we're acknowledged.
Hey,
well,
Nick,
you
this
know,
is Maria.
Oh, hi, Maria.
Hi, we had technical issues again. Nick, yeah. Have you had this form of identity for a while, or as long as you can remember, the fact that you didn't want to be confined to one gender or another? What was your journey like in terms of that awareness?
Sure. I think, a conscious awareness of, I hadn't really thought about my gender all that deeply before, but I realized that my gender doesn't fit sort of the typical ways people think of a man or a woman, was probably right around about 17 years ago. I was a freshman in college. I had come out into the LGBT community in high school in the late 90s, and had mostly been thinking about my sexuality, and then very quickly as I met intersex people and genderqueer people and two-spirit people, I realized there's a lot of different terms and identities out there, and that how I see my gender actually is a bit more complicated. And so that was sort of the beginning of a longer journey, I think, of thinking about what's the language that best describes my experience or who I am. which has changed a bit over time, but has always, you know, from that time sort of been, you know, gender variant or gender queer, or another term. And now I call myself more all those things, but also agender or non-binary.
So it's not necessarily who you're attracted to. It's who you do or do not want to be described as.
Sure. I think, you know, in some cultures, gender, sex, and sexuality are really kind of intertwined. And I think in contemporary U.S. cultural context, we usually try to separate these a little bit and talk about gender as distinctive from sexuality. And gender doesn't necessarily have to be about who you're attracted to or anything like that, right? So, you know, you have transgender and cisgender people, and then you have lots of different subsets of cisgender people who are not transgender. That's the vast majority of people. And then trans could include, you know, people who don't identify with any gender or who identify with men, being a man and a woman, somewhere in between, but also transgender men and transgender women. And so there's quite a variety of different identities in there.
Well, you know, given that it's so complicated, this was, I've got to tell you, when I first heard about this, Nick, my first reaction to it was, are we overreaching a little bit here? Is a driver's license just a description, you know, 165 pounds, blue eyes, brown hair, blah, blah, blah. Really not an identity thing. And I got to tell you, much to the credit of my two daughters, they immediately jumped on me about it. They're like, no, Dad, it's more important than that. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they went on about how it really is important for people to feel secure in describing themselves the way they see themselves. And I agree with that. As you know, Nick, you lobbied the New Columbia Statehood Commission, of which I'm a member, to use gender-neutral terms in the Constitution that we created for the District of Columbia, and we did that. So we certainly believe in that. But is there any, do you feel, and I know this is a tough question, but do you feel that we're in any way trivializing the issue by doing something like a driver's license? How do you feel about that?
No, I think this is a larger direction. I mean, I think just to put it in kind of practical terms, you know, if you knew that who you are and the gender marker on your ID are incorrect, and every time you have to show it, you know, you're showing something that really isn't true to who that you are, it would be an awkward feeling, I think, for most people to, you know, suppose you identify as a man and your ID only says F on it and that's all you're allowed to show. It's a really awkward feeling and sometimes very unsafe. But also just inaccurate, right? And says that, you know, who you are doesn't isn't really captured or understood by your government. To me, the question of, you know, the gender-neutral language and the pronouns in the Constitution, you know, there's a lot of times in the past people have used he as a sort of universal, like it just captures every human being. And I think we know that that's not really how people feel about it. And I'm sure some people still feel that way. And I'm sure legally you can, you know, you can use he as a universal or interpret that means everyone. But that's usually something we try to avoid nowadays, to say, you know, he as a universal to capture all human beings doesn't feel very inclusive. And so we're really just asking for the same kinds of thing when instead of saying he or she, to say that person, or the specific thing you're referring to. And in the case of the Constitution for D.C., you know, it was talking about he or she in terms of, you know, the mayor, or rather the governor, right? Or, you know, being a judge or being an elected official. And I just feel like I want us to be able, as, you know, Washingtonians, to feel that anyone can be in these positions. It really isn't limited to a binary of genders.
Well, I must admit that I've always wondered, since all creation comes from that which is female, how God got to be a man. But that's another issue altogether.
Well, that's Mother Nature. I think if you don't mind, Nick, you might want to share, if you can, the term non-binary gender with our listeners. Exactly what does that mean, and how does that resonate with you?
Sure. I'm glad to be able to do a radio program, because often I've been asked by a newspaper, you know, give us the two sentence of what is non-binary. It's really hard to do that. So, you know, it's sort of like asking, describe women in two sentences, and that I can just give the universal definition that everyone will grasp. I would say the basics of it is that binary is the system, is a system of thinking that there is only two genders, men and women. And non-binary looks beyond that. You know, you can look at history and you can see in a number of cultures around the world, there's thousands of years of history of cultures that have acknowledged more than two genders. And so non-binary, to describe an individual or a person, is really just to say that person doesn't identify as exclusively a man or exclusively a woman. But there are many different identities within that. It's sort of an umbrella term. So for people like me, I identify as agender, so I don't identify with experiencing gender or being either a man or a woman or any other gender. I just identify as not having a gender. But there are also non-binary people who identify as having lots of gender, right? Being a man and a woman, or being in between. And for others, that, you know, it doesn't feel like it's something static. It feels like it's something fluid or changing to them. Or they feel that they're partially one gender, but not fully. And so what does that mean? It depends on the person, the individual. You'd have to ask each person their own experience, but it's really a category as the sort of catch-all for folks that might not otherwise fit into another category.
So, Michael, if I may ask, because
I'm having a hard time hearing you guys.
Okay. I was going to say, if I could ask you, Nick, what this would feel like to you, because I have grown up seeing prejudice and chauvinism and sexism and racism firsthand. And mm-hmm. I grew up with male men and firemen and all that sort of thing. So personally, I like it now that we say postal carriers and firefighters and assembly mm-hmm. members and Congress members. So I'm, as much as I embrace being a woman and have am a mother, I've given birth to four children, I'm thinking that I might choose X.
Hey, okay, that's better. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't want to necessarily be known as a man or a woman. Would that be offensive to you if I did that?
For me, no. I mean, I think people should be aware of who they are and how they're perceived in the world. But, you know, even when I was in meetings with the director of the DMV in D.C., I learned that they've been thinking about these issues for a while. We actually went in to lobby them, essentially, to try to get a gender-neutral option on an ID. And before we could even really sit down and start talking, the director said, actually, we were planning a gender-neutral option on the ID, and we have been since last summer. And what became clear in some of those conversations is they really understood that there's aspects of what we've made into these IDs that are really problematic. Some of that, you know, is something that can be changed administratively, but some of that is years of kind of how the law and policy around this has been built up, especially the sort of post-9/11 kickback that, you know, that then resulted in the Real ID Act and trying to harmonize different jurisdictions, but also making it harder for people to access getting accurate ID, requiring more and more pieces of documents from people. And then the question of, you know, what kind of information should you even be showing? So the piece that came out of this in the conversation was that DC had been participating in a pilot project around, you know, digital ID, that you could show an ID on a phone and that there's a database that can kind of verify that it's real, you know, that that's really your ID. And they're piloting this, apparently, and using it as, like, a way to ID people at bars. And when they were talking to us about this, they said, you know, we know that there's information that that bouncer should not be looking at. They don't need to know your address. They don't need to know your gender. So why is it we include some of this information? So it was clear to me that it wasn't just about, I mean, of course it's also about non-binary people, and we want to exist and, you know, be valued by society and our governments, but, you know, I think there's also the question of whether some of these things really add anything to the security of an ID.
Well, I know that in D.C., you know, they have different shaped driver's licenses. Like my kids have a vertical driver's license instead of a horizontal driver's license because that shows that they're under 21 years of age, and it makes it easier for the bouncer or the whoever's carding them to understand that they're not old enough to drink. So I guess we can't do the math anymore with that problem. But yeah, it seems to me that makes sense, because we do give out too much information on many levels, and with all that's going on in the internet today, with stolen identities and other things, I think that we should err on the side of caution. Let me ask you, Nick, let's broaden it out a little bit, because I know that you're an LBG activist. So what do you think of the recent tweet by our president that transgender people should not be in the military, should not serve?
I think it's pretty horrifying, but also not really a surprise, given that we've had a president encouraging police brutality, violence at his own rallies, banning Muslims, building a wall, saying Mexicans are rapists, vile comments about women, mocking people with disabilities. So I don't see it as much of a surprise. But it is quite horrifying, I think, because this is a commander-in-chief who's just trying to fire thousands of people by tweet, which is ridiculous.
Well, I've got to tell you that I think people...
It doesn't have any veracity behind it either. So.
Yeah, and much to the credit... Much to the credit of people like you, Nick, who have been out there advocating, you know, the military stood up and said, we're not going to do this. We're not going to follow through on this policy position at right now. You know, it's going to be under further review. And I really got to tell you, I think that's amazing, because I think 20 years ago they wouldn't have done that. They would have just said, this is what the commander-in-chief wants, and this is what we're going to do.
Right. Yeah. Again, through social media.
Yeah. Again, through social media. Yeah. And that's a whole nother subject that Marie and I will have to get into later about, you know, do we really want to govern by social media? That's a little scary, too.
So, Nick, do you see yourself as a champion here in this regard? Because I'm actually liking this a lot. Michael, you couldn't hear us when I was saying that. I prefer an X after my name. What does it matter whether I'm a man or a woman or identify as such? It's nobody's business.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's just, go ahead, Nick.
No, I mean, I think identity is really important. And, you know, Maria, as you were saying earlier, you know, it's important to you that you're a woman. And I think for all of us, our identities can be important. But the question is as to whether, you know, you should have government classifications of you in that kind of way. Is the part that I think is really questionable. I mean, of course we want good demographic data, right? We want to study and research and understand what's happening in communities and the diversity of genders that exist and race and all kinds of categories. But that doesn't mean that I need to carry around an ID that proves my race or that proves my gender according to government.
Exactly.
You know, for old people like me, Nick, it's, you know, all of this is somewhat confusing. And, you know, I run for office in Washington. We have a very active LGBT community. And I'm often asked the question how I feel about gay people. And I think that, you know, this is my standard answer. And I think it really is an example of the way most people in America feel, you know, that I have gay neighbors who are my friends. I have gay colleagues who I work with, who I respect. I have gay members of my family who I love. But some of this is very confusing for us. So how do we simplify it?
I don't know an answer to that. I mean, I think that my work as an educator, I'm usually trying to get folks to think about nuance. You know, I think the simplification is to think about human rights and to think about how everyone should have access to voting, should have access to health care, should have access to housing. And, you know, often an ID is linked to that. So to me, there's a human rights issue around having access to, you know, just having access to ID, but also having that ID be inclusive and accurate. And we've seen that in D.C. There was a Washington Post magazine article about how, you know, many people leaving incarceration and coming back into the city aren't able to get an accurate ID. The people who don't have money are being evicted. Their documents, underlying documents, get destroyed in the eviction, and then they can't get an ID, and then they can't get a job. And so to me, there's just, that's the simplification of it, is just think about the things that people need access to, and people will, of course, want to feel included, even if you don't understand it. But I think as an educator, I want people to understand the complexity and nuance. And so, and I think the way to do that is to be open, but also to listen to people who are trying to tell their stories or are telling their stories.
I think the simplification is that we don't have to be a man or a woman. We're a human.
Well, there you go, Maria. I mean, you know, that's the rule on Shadow Politics. When in doubt, defer to Maria because she always has the right answer.
Well, literally. I mean, who says that we have to be a man or a woman? We're human beings. We can all agree on that, don't you think?
Right. I think so. And I think there's a very limited context in which we need to use, you know, those terms, those gender terms. I think that for the most part, we don't need to use them. And, you know, it's funny. I want to tell you an experience that I had. I was the administrative director of a nonprofit that did a report. And I don't know that a lot of people know this, but the federal government has been using gender neutral terms for a long time. And we did a report and we were actually admonished by the government. Now this was an error, but we were admonished for not using gender neutral terms because we referred to pregnant women.
How would you refer to them?
Well, they said we should use pregnant people, and of course we laughed at that. And when they looked at it, they laughed at it too. I mean, there are some specific cases, you know, pregnancy being one of the few. There are some specific cases where gender may be relevant. On a driver's license, all right, I'm convinced it's not relevant.
I mean, I think that there are more conversations in this space, and certainly the spaces I'm in, people would encourage more neutral language like pregnant person. Or person with a uterus, or specific, you know, when talking about those kinds of things, to not necessarily gender it, even though the vast majority may be of a certain gender, just to make, you know, especially with healthcare, making sure that people have access to it. There's a number of trans men who can't access certain healthcare services because they're told, well, you're not a woman, but you have a uterus, but we don't know how to handle that. What does that mean? So to me, there are actually things we have to start thinking about differently. I know that's going to take people some time to understand why does this matter? How do we do it? Including, you know, how to refer to people using the right pronouns. And these aren't things that we're used to thinking about.
So what's the next step for you, Nick? I mean, as an activist, you're certainly, obviously, you're in the forefront of this, being the first person in America to have one of these licenses. But what's the next step for you? What do you think we need to do at this point moving forward?
I think there's so many conversations and things that people can do. You know, I work on LGBT issues in higher education as my profession. And so I see lots of directions for that. You know, we continue to do educational work to talk about the intersections of culture, race, class, sexual and gender identities, and so many other things that are aspects of who that we are. On policy issues, certainly there's a lot to still be done to make sure that people aren't being excluded from services or told, well, we don't have anything that works for you. I actually think with gender, you know, there's a longer-term arc on this, but I think that, you know, in D.C., I've seen a number of restaurants that have only gender-neutral restrooms, whether it's, you know, the small restaurant that has maybe two restrooms and that's gender, you know, their individual restrooms and they're gender-neutral, as is required by D.C. regulations. But then we also have examples of a restaurant where you can find six or seven stalls that are, you know, floor-to-ceiling doors and just part of a single restroom that anyone can use. And so I think we have a lot of issues like that where there's ways we can be, you know, really applying the idea of an inclusive or universal design to spaces, to forms, to policies that get us thinking a little bit different and creating more inclusive spaces.
Yeah, well, that, you know, what about the backlash from that? Nick, now that you bring up the bathroom thing, look at what happened in North Carolina. Isn't that a reaction to that?
Yeah, I see a lot of what I mean, I think it's fear-mongering. People who, you know, we've seen this within the LGBT community on just, like, gay issues for a long time. I mean, some of the same people who've been advocating some of the anti-transgender or so-called bathroom bills in different
right.
parts of the country, some of the same people who are behind that were also the same people who were, you know, arguing for anti-sodomy laws, that they just wanted to put gay people in jail. And so they may not be bringing that up, and you may not realize that they have a very extremist religious argument usually underneath what that they're doing, but they're not going to bring that up usually in a legal setting. But it's some of the same advocates. And I think what they're using is what we've seen with gay folks is when somebody knows somebody who's gay, a neighbor, a friend, family member, and they talk to them or they've heard their story, their opinions really do change, especially on some of these basic policies of inclusion or non-discrimination. And I think when folks know trans people better, the same kinds of things can happen as well.
Well,
speaking of trans,
Nick,
what do you think Caitlyn Jenner has done for the community in that regard?
Well, I think I'm a bit skeptical of some of that. She's been a Trump supporter, I believe, and has thought that Trump was somehow going to be, you know, supportive of trans people. I don't see that coming to fruition. But I do think it's important that we have more and more visible people, voices, you know, within the communities, that people can understand and have some of those stories for sure, to look toward. So that's certainly a positive. And I hope that we can have more and more folks talking, reaching out, those kinds of things.
Well, and in defense of Caitlyn Jenner, she did come out this week against the president's transgender ban on people in the military. So I guess she's kind of on the fence about some things as well. But tell us, Nick, how people can learn more about this. Do you have a website, or is there some point of contact that people can make to learn more about this issue and get involved if they want to?
Sure. I mean, I don't have I think there's actually a lot that people can do if they want to educate themselves. So one of my full-time job, I work at the University of Maryland, and we've been working on some online resources. And so that's at trans.umd.edu, and we're still working on that site. It's not really finalized, at least in its first rendition, we're hoping to have done in mid-September. But already in the training section, people can see different webinars that will tell you about terminology, trans-inclusive language, LGBT people of color issues, those kinds of things you can find online resources for there. I would say Wikipedia has a lot of amazing stuff. Just if you look up things like third gender or gender systems or non-binary, you'll find a lot of articles that talk about the long history of some of these things. You can find sections even on kind of recognition through gender-neutral IDs or having a third option on a passport. So there's articles about that. And then I have a website called mypronouns.org, which is a resource for folks who are wondering about how people are using pronouns and why are you sharing your pronouns and how do you share your pronouns and what if I make a mistake? All these kinds of things. There's a lot of information that can be found there.
Well, that's great. Any more questions for Nick before we let him go? And you have to come back. You're going to have to come back twice now, Nick, because I didn't know you worked at the University of Maryland. You know, I'm a Terrapin. So you're going to have to come back and talk basketball with me at some point. And we're also going to want you to come back at some point and as things progress and let us know how we're doing in reforming some of the things you're working on. But, Maria, you got any last questions for Nick before we let him go?
Other than thanking you for taking the time to visit with us and also for raising awareness for the subject that hopefully is going to get more exposure, because I know Oregon has their version of it. So it's, you guys are the exception, not the norm.
Yep, but part of the trend, I think. Yeah, part of the trend. I mean, D.C., Oregon, and, you know, there's legislation in California and New York as well.
I would
forward.
That's the good news. We got
God bless California. God bless California. They're always out there, right?
Blue is blue is blue. Thank you, Nick. Okay. Really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for having
you,
me.
Nick. And thanks for being on. And we'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Great. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
All right.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, Maria. Boy, do we have a few things to talk about, huh?
Yeah.
What a week.
Yeah, but I want to talk to you about the 11-month-old baby boy in the UK that passed away at the end of the week.
Was there anything sadder in the news than that? Was it, I mean,
well, what I didn't get is how the parents' wishes got trumped, pardon the expression, by the system. How it came, I know when you've got, let's say, a religious family that doesn't want to take Western medicine and intervene, and then sometimes the law steps in and says, no, we got to, you know, give this diabetic whatever, got to give blood transfusions, whatever. But what I don't understand is why Charlie Gard's parents, until the very end, when they said when he went from the hospital to hospice, could we please take him home, they were denied that too.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And, you know, I guess that we hear these stories from time to time of, you know, we used to use this expression that they were caught between the switches, you know, that they got that they got tangled up in the details. And I don't know if that's what happened or not. I remember a case when I worked for the Democratic Committee where some woman was driving her child in Ohio several hundred miles twice a week to get dialysis, and she trained how to give dialysis to her child and found out that for, I don't know, some sum of like $50,000, she could buy a dialysis machine, and the government was paying $150,000 to give the kid dialysis long distance. So she figured it was a win-win, but the government wouldn't let her buy the machine. And finally, Ronald Reagan actually stepped in, and I don't know if he did it by executive order or what he did, but he got the woman the machine, you know. But I think there are many cases of that, and I'm not sure if Charlie was caught in the switches or what, but yeah, it was tragic news to see him pass.
I mean, just as a parent, you can imagine, and the parents saying, okay, we understand you're not going to let us take the baby out of the hospital. You're not going to let us take our child to the United States. You're not going to let us do anything else. Let our child die in the peace and the sanctity of our home and in our arms.
Absolutely.
And they denied that too.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and that's a problem that government has, right, is that they can be absolutely cold and indifferent to these kind of issues.
Except for we're talking about humans here. And, I mean, it makes me well up, and I know you as a father, I mean, to have that right taken away from you, okay, the system, however we got into it, we're part of it, and et cetera, but talk about death without dignity. You know,
well,
a week before he was going to be a year old, it took a tragic story and made it worse.
Well, and you know, I don't know about you, but the thing that bothers me most, one of my pet peeves in life are those bureaucrats that think that all they have to do is follow the rules and follow the rules for everybody. And it doesn't make any difference what the circumstance is, and it doesn't make any difference what, you know, what the context is. Just follow the rules, follow the rules, follow the rules, even when it's stupid, you know.
Well,
and
it brings
us back to the
Bible,
right?
The Bible,
yes.
With the two mothers in front of the judge, and the judge finally says, let's just cut the child in half. And the mother says, no, she can have the baby, and that's when the judge knew who the mother was, because only a mother would have that kind of compassion. That I would rather the child live and me not have it than have it die by being severed in half.
Yeah, and so, you know what, we see this all the time in government and in big organizations too, where they just do ridiculous things to follow the rules, even though they, you know, they've got to have on a gut level the understanding that what they're doing is wrong.
Right.
So, you know, our condolences go out to those parents, and we're just so sorry that he got caught in this kind of government,
Well, I was told that it was made political, which I didn't hear any political ramifications. All I heard was that parents' rights were being denied. And again, I don't know why, and I don't know the circumstances. I just know they were in the system. But at the very end, to have had it be something that could have been sentimental and private was just adding insult to injury. But we don't have to belabor that. But you're talking about the shakeup in the White House?
Oh, my God, yeah. But let me say, before we get there, that I agree with Aristotle that everything is political. Everything that involves two people, there's some politics involved. So I don't know what the politics work here, but I'm sure as time goes on and people examine the situation more post-mortem, those things will come out. I'm talking about the shakeup in the White House. What do you think of this new guy? What do you think of this guy, Scaramucci?
See, all I keep thinking about is the song from Queen.
Oh, yeah, right. Can you do the Fandango? Well, he can do the Fandango, can he? But he comes, you know, it seems to me that this is the last guy you would pick.
Well,
right? Because, okay, go ahead.
I don't know about that, but I do, with the stories that I hear, and who knows what we can believe, is that he's been priming himself for this for months now, including missing the birth of his son so he could be with the president. I mean, some of the stories are just terrible. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that you know, they, because of the criticism that the president is taking for his tweeting, for his outlandish behavior, for his kind of over-the-top comments to even people like the Boy Scouts, for God's sakes, I think the last guy you want is a guy like him, you know, that seems to have this personality. Now, I don't know if that's just Scaramucci trying to please the president and thinking that this is what needs to be done, or if this is really who he is, but I think he is I think you'd want somebody calm and reasonable and not really in your face, you know, more of a, I don't know the right political person to pick, more of a, you know, an Elizabeth Warren than Rudolph Giuliani kind of person, you know, somebody that's more reserved. Huh?
I think Elizabeth Warren is strident. I don't see her as a good example. Giuliani is probably a better one, but
I only mean that in the sense of her personality, that she comes off as kind of a calmer person. Not her politics, but you know, I mean that personality rather than this guy who's definitely bombastic.
Well, I was going to say a pugnacious bulldog.
Yeah.
And I guess that's Trump wants more of the same of what he seems to be emanating. But then the chief of staff change I find is an interesting one, because I happen to respect the man that he's chosen, and I don't know what happened to Priebus, but somehow he flamed out after 6 months.
Well, you know, I was always surprised about Priebus.
Were you?
Because he didn't support Trump, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so that surprised me just from a political standpoint, that you would take a person that at the beginning of the campaign, if we can remember that far back, you know, political memories like a goldfish. You know, it's like 6 months goes by and we forgot what happened. But he was somebody that came after Trump, not only didn't support him, but actually came after him in the beginning. So when he chose him, I was surprised about that. And I said to myself, well, maybe he's just trying to show that, you know, that he's a reasonable person and the campaign's over and we've all got to work together. So he's going to accept this guy who really wasn't his fan to begin with. So, you know, I think that was something that was doomed from the very onset. General Kelly, I mean, you know, when the place is falling apart, who do you call? You call a Marine, right? You got to get people back in line, right? You got to get people back in line. You got to get people, you know, restore some order. And that seems to be what's going on there right now, is chaos. And certainly Kelly would be a good pick, I think, not only because of his reputation, but because both sides seem to like him.
They do, and I'm curious how he got on the radar. Do you know anything about that?
I think he's one. First of all, he's one of the few people that's not being criticized. You know, as the director of Homeland Security, you know, nobody's saying anything bad about him. That's one thing. And there aren't a lot of guys out there that are serving in this administration that are not getting beat up a little bit as a, you know, an overflow from what's happening in the White House. So that's one thing. And another thing, I think, you know, that they looked and they said, look, this is a guy that everybody respects. And that's the kind of person that we need in here. And, you know, Washington has become such a partisan place. How many people are there that fit that category? That the left respects and the right respects. You know, I mean, there aren't a lot, unfortunately.
Well, since you're in our nation's capital, what do you hear? Do you hear the rumors as they are coming to fruition? Or are you hearing news like we hear it?
Well, I think, you know, my news, when you talk about fake news, the news that I get is insulated with a big, big layer of liberalism. You know, we're all horrified here in Washington about what's going on, and there's a problem here. And I'm sorry that we didn't get to talk to Nick about this, because Nick and I talked about this earlier. But still, in Washington, we are not dealing with what's going on in America, and that really scares me. Okay, we're not dealing with the people that support Donald Trump and that put him in the White House. And we need to do that. We need to, you know, this isn't about resistance. You and I have talked about this before. It bothers me that this is our clarion call, you know, resist, 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 resist.
Right.
We also need to find a way to work things out, because when if Trump goes, and I think he will, I don't think he'll make all 4 years, I got to tell you. But when
really?
He goes, yeah, I don't think that, yeah, look what's happening. I mean, you know, we've had two chiefs of staff. We're going to have two Homeland Security advisors, two communications directors, two press secretaries. I mean, and it's been 6 months. Who wants to work in the White House?
But here's how I would spin that. I would say he's promised to drain the swamp, so he's doing it in his own swamp as well.
Yeah, but how do you drain the swamp when you're hiring people from Wall Street who were hedge fund leaders? Those are the guys you're supposed to be kicking out, and you're bringing them into the White House. He's not draining the swamp. He's just bringing in a new crew. I think that's my opinion. You know, you've got the Republicans in Congress. Look, you got McCain. You've got McCain and Susan Collins. Now, Collins from Maine is as liberal as a Republican gets. I'll give you that. But McCain and Collins and other people standing up against the health bill. And then you got Lindsey Graham saying if he has the nerve to fire our attorney general, there's going to be hell to pay. When's the last time you heard a Republican say that about a Republican president? I mean, I think he's losing it quick. I really do think he's losing
it. Interesting
but
that you think so. I wonder, because what I keep hoping is this is the pendulum thing, that, you know, ultimately it's going to correct itself. It has to. It's like gravity. You can't defy it. But he's not stupid. So on top of that, but I don't know if the ego is bigger than the brain, and that may also create his fall from grace, but he didn't get to where he got because he didn't know people and he doesn't have good instincts. And that's what I keep hoping to kick in, is that businessman, that's what he promised. I think that's what resonated with people. Forget about Make America Great Again and the Rust Belt being ignored and the flyovers on and all that. I think people wanted a business person in charge of the business of our government, balancing the budget and that sort of thing. That is, to me, what he spoke to and why he resonated so well. Because that, to me, isn't political. That's practical. And if he can do that, then he could, and shut up, he would be doing our country a favor, whether you are on the left or the right.
Well, you know, I think maybe that's the difference in our perspectives, Maria, from where I stand and from where you stand. You know, I think that he was elected because, number one, Hillary Clinton was a person that represented everything that America disliked about liberals. We talked down to America. You know, you don't really want a gun. You're just too damn stupid to realize it. And we're going to explain to you why you don't want it. I think that was problem number one. And I think problem number two is that people want change. And I've heard people just interviewed this week who said, well, you know, I don't agree with what he's doing, but he's changing things. And I like that. So you know, and that's what bothers me about the Democratic resistance thing, the Democratic liberal resistance thing, is that we're not talking about the change issues and the things that America thinks need to be done. All we're doing is criticizing him. And that's not going to get us anywhere. At least that's my perspective. You know,
well, but change would be also having a business person in the office of president and not a politician. That was change, too.
Right, but that's part of his problem, isn't it? Is that he is a business person, and business people shouldn't run politics, because business and politics are different things. And he keeps on shooting himself in the foot, I think, because he is a business person. Look, when you're working for Donald Trump, and he's head of the Trump Corporation, and he says, Maria, I want you to do blah, 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 your choices are to do it or not do it and get fired. But when you're right. president of the United States, there's so many different power centers that you're saying to Congress, I want you to do this, and Congress is standing up, and you've got John McCain, who's an American hero, saying, this man thinks he's our boss. He's not our boss. We're equal to him, right? That's what McCain said.
Right.
We're his equal. We're not, you know, and then you've got the special prosecutor who's saying, I don't answer to him. I answer to other people. I answer to the Justice Department. And that's a hard thing to get, you know, wrap your head around. And that may be part of his problem. And I think another part of his problem is, as a businessman, he was primarily a promoter. And he's a good promoter. And you've already said it. He understands people. He has great instincts. He has all these other things. But then when you get to the White House, you also have to have some follow through. You know, it's not just about promoting. And this is my prediction. I make this on Shadow Politics. You know, you heard it here first. I think he gives up after a while. I think he says, this isn't worth the strength.
Yeah.
Who needs it? Right. I get to go back, and I get, when I move out of the White House, I move into a bigger place.
Right, you know, I get to go to Mar-a-Lago.
I'm not going back to Sheboygan. I'm going. No offense to the people of Wisconsin, but I, you know, I'm going back to Manhattan, and I'm a star, and I'm a world leader now. Whether I'm president of the United States or not, I'm a world figure. I'm on the world stage, and I'll be there forever.
I can see him thinking that, but he's also not a quitter. That's the other thing we know about him.
Right.
How many times has he recovered from loss and scrambled and got back? Which, you know, one of my favorite adages is to fall down is life, to get back up is living. And he's been excellent about doing that. And you know that I am a Trump supporter quasi, because his outlandishness, his outrageousness, his boorishness, his social media use, although you could argue that it's akin to the fireside chat back in the day, like the radio broadcast, now he's speaking to the folks on Twitter. So I kind of give him that, but not doing policy decisions on Twitter. But in any event, I still have the Americans have spoken. We have three branches of government. We have in place checks and balances. The man, whether he's a megalomaniac or a narcissist or whatever you want diagnosis to give him, which no one can unless they really know him interpersonally, let's see what happens. Because I assume you on the left are going, woohoo, we couldn't have it better, but you can't get it together in the meantime.
Well, yeah, except that it's scary because we can't get it together. I mean, you said it. I mean, yeah, on the one hand, you're going, well, you know, it's not working out. Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't do you any good to cut your nose off to spite your face. And that's
correct.
How I feel about the resistance thing, is it's cutting our nose off to spite our face. Well, this is a discussion that's going to go on and on, and we're running out of time here. And I also have an obligation.
I know you're a football fan, aren't you?
A football fan? Oh, yeah.
I know you're a football fan, but basketball?
Oh, yeah. College basketball.
Do you know about LeVar Ball?
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The guy with the cocky father who just got drafted number one? Yeah.
Well, LeVar is the father, and he's got three sons, but he's in a tournament. I think it's called Adidas Uprising, and he's got an Adidas shoe that sells for just under $500. But he had a female ref ejected from the game after she gave them a technical foul. And the folks agreed, and they brought a male referee in who proceeded to give him a technical himself. And the freaking guy wouldn't leave the game, so the referee called the game over, and his team happened to be losing, so they lost the game.
Wow.
This is in this day and age, Michael. 2 days ago this happened. This is still racism. I used to ref basketball games myself. That's why it stuck out. I played basketball too, but I was like, I never paid attention if they were, I did it when I was in high school, so if they were boys or girls is what we called them back then. They were just five people on the court playing the game, so 10 total, right? No one bothered that I was a female that with a whistle in my mouth running up and down, back and forth just as much as they were. But in this day and age, fast forward decades, that a man is having a woman ejected because he didn't like her call and they allowed it?
That's absolutely outrageous. And
it's ridiculous.
And, you know, I didn't hear about that, but that is absolutely outrageous. And we should get people on the show to talk about that because, you know, Title IX happened when I was in college. So this is supposed to be a thing
in the past.
Which people
don't even know what that means. The girls don't know about Title IX. And I mean,
you want to talk about
short-lived memories. Our females don't know what women have done to help them be where they are today. That's also terrible.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely outrageous that they would do something like that. And I used to, you know, nothing upset me more in Little League. All my kids played Little League basketball, soccer, all these things. When a parent would argue with the ref, I'm like, what are we teaching these kids? The ref made the call. That's the call. It's a game. That's the call.
Right.
That's his job, her job.
Right.
And they made it.
Right.
Well, before we sign off tonight, I have to give a shout out to Representative Shelley. I think that's how you pronounce her name. Shellie, Maine's 1st District. Representative Adam Smith from Washington's 9th. And Representative Elizabeth Este from Connecticut's 5th. They all signed onto our statehood bill in the last week. God bless you for doing that. All Democrats, unfortunately, but we're still working on your side, Maria. But thanks, America. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks for Nick. And we're going to leave you tonight with a song from Sammy Davis Jr., right? How old school is that? I Gotta Be Me, and this is for Nick and his friends. See you next week.
Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I gotta be me, I gotta be me. What else can I be? I want to live.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.